The story of John Hays Hammond. Among the captains of industry is a band of hard-fisted adventurers who travel to the ends of the earth in their constant search for buried treasure. Gold, silver, petroleum. One of these men was John Hays Hammond, mining engineer. Born in San Francisco during the booming days of the gold rush, young Hammond determined his course in life at an early age. After an education at Yale and Freiburg in Germany, he returned to the West in search of a job. One of the first men he approached was his father's old friend, George Hurst.
Oh, you want me to give you a job, eh, Jack?
Well, that's it, Mr. Hurst. You see, I just returned from Germany, and I...
Yeah, I know all about it. You've passed all your examinations, and now you think you're a full-fledged mining engineer.
Well, I would like a chance to get started.
Of course you would.
Now, my father thought that...
I'd hire you right off the bat. No. Friendship doesn't mean a thing when you're in this business. I'm sorry, Jack, but I couldn't even consider hiring you.
Oh, but Mr. Hurst...
Sorry, can't be done.
Well, I think I'm entitled to an explanation. Now, you control the number of mines, and I've heard that you're looking for men. Now, why won't you give me a chance?
Fact of the matter is, you've been to the mining academy at Freiburg, and you've learned a lot of darn geological theories and big names for little rocks. That doesn't go in this country.
Oh, I see. Well, have you any other objections?
Nope. Freiburg is enough.
Well, if you won't tell my father, I'll make a confession to you. I didn't learn one thing of any importance at Freiburg.
What?
That's right. I didn't learn a thing.
Well, in that case, you might come around tomorrow. Perhaps I can give you a job.
In this manner, stocky, muscular John Hammond embarked on his career, winning a reputation for himself as an expert in gold mining. In the autumn of 1893, he heard the call of a richer and more dangerous venture. Gold had been discovered in South Africa, and Hammond set out to make his fortune. On the spring morning in 1894, we find him in Cape Town, seated on a stone bench near the base of Table Mountain. By his side is the Prime Minister of Cape Colony, Cecil Rhodes.
Mr. Hammond, I take it you're not in South Africa for your health.
No, I don't mind the climate here, but for healthfulness... I prefer California.
You know about my mining interest in the Transvaal?
Yes, I've spent some time investigating Rand Field. I don't have a very good opinion of the property.
Hmm? Why?
Well, to be frank, I don't believe the mines are managed right.
I see. How would you like to take charge of all my mining interest in the Rand?
Well...
You may name your own salary.
Very well. $75,000 a year and a participation in the profit.
Agreed.
But I won't take any interference from your local board of directors. I want to deal directly with you.
Good. I need men like you, Hammond. Men who don't mind facing difficulty.
Have the Boers been causing you any trouble?
A little. It's a very strange situation. The Boers object to Englishmen entering the Transvaal and developing mines, yet they refuse to work the territory themselves.
Well, it might be a good idea to search for some new properties. Up in the Matabeleland, for instance.
You think there's gold to be found in the interior of Africa?
I'm sure of it.
All I want is your favorable report, and I'll start operations. The journey to Matabeleland will be fairly risky.
For the salary you're paying me, I can afford to take a few risks. But I'll concentrate on Ranfield at present.
Good. John Hammond, you're now my chief consulting engineer.
Thank you, sir. And may the relationship prove prosperous to us both.
Within a few months, the Rand gold fields were operating smoothly under the supervision of Hammond. Then, on Hammond's advice, Rhodes sold all his outside holdings and started deep-level mining in Rand Field. In a short time, vast quantities of gold were being burrowed from the mines of the Transvaal. Rhodes made enough money to finance the colonization of all Africa. But now, a huge, unfriendly figure loomed over the British enterprise. The figure of Oom Paul Kruger, president of the Boer Republic.
The British have come to the Transvaal, but they must abide by our law. Dynamite and powder for blasting must be purchased from the Boers. All foreign children attending Johannesburg schools must learn the language of Taal. No foreigner may conduct a public meeting of any kind or have any part in the administration of justice or of government.
Hammond! Hammond, I say Hammond.
Hmm? What's the matter, Jones?
How much longer are we going to put up with it? How much longer are we going to let Kruger tell us how to conduct our minds and our lives?
Why, anything happened?
Plenty. charge of that dynamite exploded prematurely this morning. Luckily, nobody was killed.
But we won't use Kruger's dynamite anymore. That's final.
But, Hammond, what are we going to do? Kruger won't let us buy good dynamite.
I'll get in touch with Roach.
Yes. Tell him that every Englishman in the Transvaal is going to rebel. It's... I say, what are you looking at?
That's Catherine Wolfman over by the shaft. I think he's drunk.
Of course he's drunk. A whole dozen of them went down the lift this morning, so drunk they could hardly see. Kruger's outfit has been loading him up with cake smoke.
Yeah, we'll put a stop to that, too. Come on.
Hey, you over there.
You call to me, Boiler?
Get off the field. You're drunk.
No. I go to work down in mine.
No man works around here in that condition. Go home and sober up.
No, Boiler. I go to work. Earn plenty silver.
You listen here. You don't get off this field in 2 minutes.
No, Boiler.
Oh, don't catch him. He's running towards the cat.
I say there, Horner. Don't let him get in that cage.
He's lowering the horse. Catch him before he... Watch out! Oh. Oh. I fell over the cage. Down the cat.
More of Kruger's work. That makes the third man we've lost this month. It's murder, that's what it is.
It won't go on much longer. I'm going to see Rhodes tonight.
Pod Hammond, I'll see to it your men are provided with rifles and ammunition.
Oh, let me get the plan straight, Rhodes. As soon as my men are ready to fight, I'll send a signal to Dr. Jameson. And Jameson will be waiting at the border.
Yes, Asane, with 1,500 men equipped with field artillery and machine guns. Each of Jameson's men will carry a spare rifle for your followers at Johannesburg.
Then we can't fail. But remember, Jameson must not cross the border until I give the signal. I must have plenty of time to prepare for this revolt.
You may have 6 months if necessary. But remember what I have always said.
Yes. The only justification for revolution is success.
For weeks, Johannesburg prepared for the revolt. Rifles came over the border concealed in oil drums while Hammond secretly organized his men. At Fitzanne, Dr. Henry Jameson champed at the bit impatiently, eager to attack. Then, like a bombshell, came word to Johannesburg that Jameson had crossed into the Transvaal without waiting for Hammond's signal. And in a dark Johannesburg cellar...
Quiet. Men, quiet. Now, Jameson is on his way. He'll be here at any hour. The Boers have all gathered near the fort in the outskirts of town.
What will we do? The minute they see Jameson, they'll turn that cannon on the town. We'll be wiped out.
Oh. Are you afraid, Jones?
No, I'm not afraid.
Well, that's good. Because you're coming with me.
Where?
To the fort. We're going to seize the fort before Jameson gets here. Jones and I will enter the fort. The rest of you men will wait outside.
But that's impossible, Hammond. There aren't enough of us.
Now look, there isn't going to be any monkey business about this. You're going into the fort and I'll be right beside you. And if I see the slightest sign of anything wrong...
But Hammond, it's suicide. Don't you understand? It's suicide.
Mr. Hammond, I have a message.
Oh, read it.
It's written in Dutch.
Give it to Jones. He can read it.
Here you are, sir.
Jameson isn't coming. The Boers have defeated him. Jameson has surrendered at Duncombe.
Did you hear that?
Well, that marks the finishing of our plans, men. Unless I'm greatly mistaken, it may mark the finish of us.
Son Hayes Hammond, you have been convicted of high treason against the Boer Republic. Have you any legal reason to urge why sentence should not be passed upon you?
No.
The sentence of the court is that you be conveyed to the jail at Pretoria, that you be kept there until the time or place of execution shall be appointed by lawful authority, and that you be taken to the place of execution to be there hanged by the neck until you are dead. May Almighty God have mercy on your soul.
But John Hayes Hammond was not destined to be hanged. After 5 months in jail, he was granted his freedom for $125,000, and the fine was paid by Cecil Rhodes. Towards the end of 1899 at Burlington House, London...
You're really returning to America, eh, Hammond?
Yes, I've been thinking of it for a long time.
Why don't you reconsider and go back to South Africa? I'll make you general manager of all my interests.
Well, I'm sorry. It's not in my line. The Rand mines don't need me anymore. Are they making money hand over fist?
You're still getting a percentage of it. I'll offer you twice as much.
Yeah, I can't do it, Rhodes. You know the kind of work I like. Exploring. There's still plenty of territory in the United States and Mexico that hasn't been explored.
Well, Hammond, it's been a good fight. You've done a lot for Africa, for England, and I dare say for yourself.
Yes, I've made quite a bit of money, that's true.
And you'll continue to make money. As long as you hold on to your interest in the Rand Field.
Well, I'm selling a great part of my interest. I intend to invest the money in American enterprises.
Eh?
Is it so strange? You're an Englishman, Rhodes. You didn't develop the gold fields because you wanted money. Your only thought was of strengthening the British Empire. I'd like to do much the same thing, only for my country. You understand?
Quite.
Well, we'll meet again someday. Perhaps it'll be beside a campfire in some strange land. The stars blinking high above and a lion roaring in the distance. Like the night in Notabilaland.
Perhaps.
Well, goodbye. I must be leaving.
Goodbye, Hammond. You've been a real friend. You're a born fighter and an excellent engineer. There's one thing I'll always remember you for. You're the only man I ever met who could smell gold 1,000 miles away.
The paths of Hammond and Cecil Rhodes never crossed again. Hammond returned to America, where he found new and profitable interests, dealing in gold, oil, and copper. He retired, a millionaire, to become President Taft's most trusted advisor and a special ambassador to England at the coronation of King George V. Upon his death in June 1936, at the age of 81, the mining profession lost one of its most valued, respected, and colorful members, John Hayes Hammond, Captain of Industry.